Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about practical projects. So I'm going to discuss a series of very simple practical projects. And the reason I'm doing it from the practical projects is this reversal all the time. If I look at any sort of process, I say, well, look, if I can reverse it. So what happens is that in general, I go in on a theoretical construct, dint, and there's heaps of information flooding around. Sometimes I don't communicate it correctly. Sometimes it's ambiguous. And just the nature of theoretical stuff. Then I come up with a practical project, which is well-reasoned and well-structured. But what I'll do is actually just talk about the practical projects, and hopefully I'll connect with a few people. There's one person in particular I'm sort of thinking of, speaking to, and that's a friend, Mark Greenhill. And he's sort of someone who can listen to all these wacky things, see a problem, an objection to get through, but also see a path through. And that's what we're sort of looking at, is rolling out a sufficient number of practical projects to get sort of a slow uptake, a slow exploration of what the problem's areas may be. And it may be something as simple as I need a foil or someone to hold the information forward before I put it forward. It might be something like that, or there may be something else that I'm missing in the actual structuring of these things. First cap off the rank is that we want to explore installations which are permanent and can aid education. I won't go into the theory as to why I'm looking at it, but let's go into the first practical project. And I should say that you'll hear this croaking. You might hear the croaking sound as I walk past the Glenbrook Lagoon on this night walk. So just to explain to Mark, I've into full-on cardiac rehab of just really pushing myself, exercising every day, trying to get the cognitive stuff up and running. And that's a background story to this, in that the conventional education markets, that's where you get access to students and you get a course and a salary, and it's where it goes past. And you'll also hear the occasional car, hopefully not going too fast. Oh, that's going a bit scarily fast as we go down there. Okay, so the first practical project is a sort of bringing our local galaxy to us, and this is true. Just listen for a while. So it creates a spatial feeling of the actual distances involved, and so on this. We're going to build an actual scale piece of our local galaxy by doing one to a trillion. So that's one to a million million scale reduction. And when you do that, the sun reduces to a small little ball bearing, call it a millimeter ball bearing, or a cashew as you have on the top of a cupcake. One of those little cashews that reduces to that size. So the first practical project, fairly simple one, is placing that cashew in the Glenbrook Visitor Centre with a small plaque around it saying that this is a scale sun, and our next nearest star is Proxima Centauri, and that's, I believe, in the centre of Sydney. We'd have to work out exactly. And that's a fair distance out. And then there's two other cashews. And they're possibly, I'd place them down around in the Opera House or around in Sydney at equal points or something like 10 metres apart maximum, probably less. Where in that, for on that scale for that cashew, our planet Earth is 15 centimetres across. So you can have a little solar system, which is nothing new, but in the Glenbrook Visitor Centre. And you could sort of, depending where you wanted to do it, you could actually have the other features at locations either in Sydney or the Blue Mountains. And this would be a very low-key educational project. So you'd be able to see it, but then be given a physical distance. And so ideally you would drive there. So in terms of the Blue Mountains tourism, it would be just a very small, quiet, low-key thing, which would be an installation that people would see and know and slowly percolate into the system. So there's a series of things that I'd like to do like that. So that's a practical one, and it's having the right connections to put the proposal together and the right position and to actually put it through. So Mark Greenhill's the mayor of the Blue Mountains, so if I can put that one through to you. Now, there's a similar one of experience, so you don't have to have, so rather than actually trying to get it into every classroom everywhere, just having this low-cost experience. So these are two little basic shoe boxes, with two or three shoe boxes where the stars are actually positioned, and the people can actually go and see it and actually see the enormous distances between stars from that. So that's a proposal. The next proposal is along the similar lines to trying to get a low-key select experience which is not contained in an organisation or is framed within a syllabus or framed within an organisation like Questacon or an observer. So this is knowledge which isn't client to an organisation. Now, this is not on the list of things that counsellor could do or help me through. And this is just making Christmas baubles the shape of electron wave functions with a small number across it. And just the unexpected difference. So this is, so you'd have a D wave function. It's quite a good looking wave function, different P wave functions, OSP3 hybrid wave functions. You'd have it up there, and people would see it there, and there's a natural interest, say if you were to decorate, just not mark it as a huge thing, but just have one quantum mechanical Christmas tree. Now, this is something which obviously can't be done overnight, but it's a seed idea of these baskets of ideas of to go in. And with all these things, if you can get it up at one place in the world, we can start to go across the immediate sort of blocks I think a lot of people have. These are non-thinking blocks. So if you speak to someone, they will immediately, the moment they see you, hear the first couple of words, their immediate thought is no. But things change if you can show a picture of one of these things happening at another place in the world. And this is coming up. So I'll discuss a little bit about the philosophy of getting these things up. The next thing that I'd like to do, a proposal, is the idea of linking the structure of the atmosphere and using the road going up the Blue Mountains, which is a fairly good monocline. I think it goes a good constant 200 metres through an S-bend. It's called the Lapstone monocline. And around that, you've got certain altitudes, and there are obviously practical restrictions here of placing on the side of the road markers just indicating in that relative 1 to 200 where 1 meter equals 500 meters, so 2 meters equals a kilometer. So you start at the base of the hill and you basically, riding up the hill, you have a ride through space, that is, to the upper atmosphere, or to space at 100 kilometers up. Now, the issue here is, again, all cognitive load. It's all good teaching. However, all the parameters that you have in class, i.e. that the class is absolutely ready for it, it's a cohort ready, and how does it fit in the syllabus, that really is not the focus of what we're doing here. So if you can imagine, for each constraint you bring, you can sort of like steer the lesson, increase its effect by having a captive audience and homework and supply like this, but each one of those things, which is an advantage, is for other students or for other people a disadvantage. And so what you're aiming for is, I suppose, 80% penetration rate of a particular lesson, and then a process to pick up the other 20%, so everyone's brought up there. And but in this situation, you want people to drive up the monocline, and on the side, see at this point you've left the troposphere, the clouds have stopped, and so you have just had different types of clouds going up the first, well, only 10 kilometres, the first, what is it, 10 metres is, 5 kilometres, 10 metres is no distance whatsoever, you get some huge distance here, you get an idea of the feeling of the ozone layer, put the ozone layer there, and you can sort of indicators out there. So the important thing is that you can possibly make it such that only kids looking out the side of their car can see these installations, and if they're sort of an experimental installation, to get some feedback and research as to whether this can go. So you have the Blue Mountains as an integrated education site. And why? Because you've got the most innovative researchers and scientists sitting up here. We can actually terraform or change or work out education in with the landscape and bring it forward. So there's this great education opportunity. So I've got some idea of having signs which are basically invisible to drivers as they're driving up, but for kids looking at their side, they can see, they watch it, they can see for a short time the information going forward. So it gets you away from the advertising traffic hazard things. So the idea is, as you can imagine, there's ways not to do it. So you've got this Joe Bloggs, who is just, they've just, say, in the RMS, and they're not committed, you know, this is not in their purview. They're interested in, I don't know, towing regulations and road services and stuff like this. This is way off their interests. So they will, you can expend your effort putting in here. They won't answer back. But there is this process going forward. Now, that being said, there is a great opportunity for to teach the spectacular geology of the Blue Mountains and the history of how the Blue Mountains are made, perhaps again at the Glenbrook Visitor Centre. That is, people are coming to the Blue Mountains, and you can sort of advertise these features and get them to look for various features by a immersive virtual reality reconstruction. But I also would like basically a... it sort of seems to me that there's a mechanical model which would appeal to kids, where you have some sort of hydraulic thing which lifts up the... the various landscapes. I don't know. There's some other practical model which we could discuss. So this is what I'm talking about, is an integrated vision to build sort of educational ecotourism in here through a series of fairly low-cost installations which can have an effect of communicating important information which has sort of piqued my interest because it's missing in people's explanation of things. But it's hard to say. People are chewing away at different things. Like I'm aware of how the space syllabus is taught, but there's these... So we're sort of moving away from traditional thoughts, more reflective personal thought. It's just to preload some of the personal thought such that you're, say, in your Glenbrook Visitor Centre. If that small percentage of people who are interested in this angle, that is sort of like stitching it in. This is the stitch in there, the... stitching in to it. There's all this museum place. The interesting thing is that people who are drawn to this space, the ability for them to be in this space already tends to be just the way it is. I haven't learnt the way to actually work the floor and push it forward. This is one thing which I'll look at, but by actually getting these things up, it would be great to get it going. So in all these things, it's access to the Glenbrook Visitor Centre. After that is access to the way you go through it. Now, I'm at the moment going down this gorge as I'm walking, going for this cardiac rehab walk. I'm doing actually really well. Just quite excited by it. But I'm going down Mitchell's Pass. Now, the entire thing is that people don't want permanent educational things, which is fine. But this is probably another example of where you could, for this particular bushwalkers up a height or distance along it, you could put regularly spaced at certain distances, corresponding to distances and time, tools. That could be one thing. So you could have at the bottom the Paleolithic time, up around the bridge you could have Mesolithic, slightly different tools and then sophisticated, just small plaques on the side of the road that if people are going to go, there's a whole series of things in which I'm trying to basically push forward with practical things. What I'll do at the moment is I'll talk about the practical stuff that I'm trying to do at the moment. And it's sort of a bit painful, a bit sad. You write to people and say, look, I'm going to do this. How about any help? And it's sort of just deathly silence. Everyone says, look, I'm too busy working. And all that type of stuff. So some polite, some responses back where they're clearly locked into their own thoughts. So this is going to describe a personal project where I'm up to, and just clicking it away. These are practical. What I've described before is a series of practical community exposure projects of re-engineering, restructuring things around us to make sort of educational art. I suppose educational art installations where certain things like physical distance or that you travel is the scale is actually brought to your mind, or altitude. As you go up, you can start to pack information in. Now, the major thing is that it will work. It will be effective, certainly in very young kids, in kids who are not interested. It will actually get a penetration in there, simply because there's sort of several dimensions of cognitive load that can't go up. So is that A, they've got to be educated in a table, translation from a table to something else, and then even in that table, that's one degree of cognitive load. Then there's a second dimension of cognitive load where the information has to go in. But if you place the information in the physical environment, their natural ability to navigate, find food, and various things go forward. Now, on this thing, the natural ability to measure food when you're eating is one aspect. So what I'm talking about here is you're in the outdoors, embedding education in the outdoors, in such a way that we can actually navigate against naysayers, or if we are naysayers, we advertise it enough through sufficient grounds that we find one place which will go. Or, more realistically, we try it here, we make up some mistakes, and we've got notes about how to go further forward. Now, one of the things before I describe my Einstein experiment, one of the things I do want to say is about making a scale local galactic cluster. So previously the scale I talked about with you is a 1 to a trillion scale. There's 1 to a billion expansion scale for quantum wave functions and possibly placing on Christmas trees or things like that, as some sort of decorations or light decorations. I can sell them at IKEA or something like that. But there's another scale, is that a light, 1 millimeter equals 1,000 light years. Now, in this case, you're at this sweet spot. So in the 1 to a trillion scale, you at a sweet spot, you can actually, you've got something which you can see in the sky and see down here, say, oh, look like that. And then from that, you've got a sweet spot because that's within the horizon. So people have a horizon idea. This is a sweet spot because at a 1 to a oh my God, the father took a raging torrent here. I'm walking a bit up from this stream, along a stream. Previously, I walked down a canyon, across a stream and up. And that's just really hard yakka. Doing this is a much more gentle thing at the moment. But what I wanted to talk about is this other thing, which is basically a kit that you can sell with a pancake mix, ice cream, chocolate, and cracking candy is for exploding stars, and you can actually make up a galaxy, where the galaxy is got a fixed dimension. So our Milky Way is 100,000 light years side to side, so that's 100 millimeters or 10 centimeters from side to side. So that's a fair whack of a fairly normal pancake, and you can build up a model pancake. Now the interesting thing is that if you're doing something with food, people instantly have cake decoration, have knowledge of where food is placed, because this is what we do all the time. You know, the one thing that we do is arrange food on a plate. People, you know, we just do it all spontaneously. You don't mix the gravy with the vegetables or whatever it is. You put it in the correct location. Now, and this is an activity, so it's not a council grade activity, so I'm just describing physical things. So you can basically have a pancake mixture, which gives you the scale of our local system, and the next pancake is of Andromeda is two meters away, and in there all the way from 10 centimeters, 5 centimeters, or 10 centimeters away from us, a bit more, are these globular clusters, bits and, not globular clusters, but satellite dwarf galaxies going in. And on that scale again, the edge of the universe is, I think, 47 kilometers away. Is that right? Yeah, about 47 kilometers away. So that's an instant scale. Now, again, that's not a, you could have at the park, at a local park, inscribed to galaxies. So you could walk, you know, or even in the visitor center, you could say, well, this is a scale model of the two galaxies. So that sort of thing can, go through. Now the thing is, people's context to push it forward. So again, we could have that idea as a second scale model in the Glenbrook Visitors Centre. So that more or less wraps up the stuff I wanted to chat to Mark Greenhill about in terms of strategising how to get through it. And look, the strategy impact could be, look, this is not going to fly because of the actual nature of the people are just hostile. Okay, I don't understand why they would be, but say, look, they are just naturally hostile. So there are these people, look, there's, I don't think we can actually fully understand the world in which people become hostile to new ideas, even before they've even thought of it. But that's valuable feedback to say, listen to it, a bit of interest in it, but no, look, it's too confusing, I don't understand. That is valuable feedback. That's a negative dip symbol. I can sort of know that I'll push forward in other areas. So what I want to do is just say where I'm up to in some other practical exercises. Now, as I'm sort of strange, it's really weird that as I'm rebuilding brain circuits, I'm seeing new switches, new dials, new features in some familiar lab equipment that I have hanging around the place I hadn't seen before. It's quite sort of chilling in a way. So what I'm talking about is that I've got this USB microscope which I need for this next section. So this next section is going to describe where I'm up to in building a practical cut through experiment. So just to put you in the picture, those practical activities, they're not idle things, they're well-planned, cut-through educational things which can hopefully reposition the flavour, the culture, for various reasons. So it's not just, it doesn't idly do one thing, it's got a whole series of features. So the previous ones don't require someone to be there 24 hours a day. It doesn't require some sort of mediator. They're just there, and they're planned such that they give insight, which they venture where people have actually pulled back. So if you can imagine, we've pulled back from educating certain things for the convenience and internal strategy, but these are things, because you've pulled back, there's certain things which you don't access, and this actually targets, it's got a, those things that I've said which are planned have got a lot of strategy built into them. They're doable, they don't require organization, they're flexible, they can be temporary, you know, they're not long term, they're not majorly structured, but they're also at key areas, fulcrum points, which really determine where people are going. It's also part of the integrated learning that they need to, say, understand atmospheric physics, to understand greenhouse gases. It's sort of like this key jigsaw puzzle piece that will change the dynamics. So it goes from people, and people don't know, and basically feel they can't understand, they won't participate as much. Okay, so covering that, we'll just quickly cover the mechanical project that I'm going up. And this is not so much, this may be interesting for Mark to listen about, but what I'm going for is, with all the key resources I have, which are very, very limited, is building a Einstein de Haas quantum pendulum. Sort of, it's a spin flip pendulum, which basically pushes the this pendulum around, but it pushes it against the universe. Very simple thing. And as I've mentioned, I've got a USB microscope, and the USB microscope will look at this pendulum, a feature on the pendulum, which I'm going to have as a, a millimeter across portrait of Einstein. I can't sort of make it all up. But this will have, so I have a, I've built the stand for it today in the shed. So what's happening now is that as things get cleaned up and my cognitive skills are going together, I can actually start building and soldering things together. So is it great? I don't know. Because I'm doing things differently, I have more time to think about things, and I might be doing it, building things more slowly, but possibly in a different route. So I've built this out of scrap. Basically, it's not from the university. In any industrial lab, you will have these cross sections of aluminium. They're in a they're square with a slot in each. They're square with a hole all the way down, which you can tap. So you've got a square section. So I think it's actually an inch by inch by inch. I think it's imperial. Although it's all everything you've got there goes metric. And then in each of those four faces is a slot which goes the entire way. In that slot you can put a sliding bolt and a sliding nut, and then you can bolt things to this. And basically, it's sort of like a amazing Meccano set. And of course, I've got a big pile of little scraps of it, and I've built basically a more meter high. It's a bit like a Christmas tree stand. It's got these legs at the base, which I've got there. I'll tell you what, there's only one Allen key I've got for it all. I built that up. It's a meter high. Then I built a cross beam, and from that cross beam, which goes across a little way, I've hung a wire down, a little copper wire going down, because I was going to do something with optical fiber because I thought that was best, but on this version I realised it's not that important. And then I've got a ferrite rod, with these little ferrite rods. Obviously I've got no money, and so to attach this wire to a ferrite rod, I have wrapped copper wire around it several times, and I have the one wire going up this meter thing. The other end of that wire bends back up and then hooks up to form a little triangle support, and then this is all attached to the ferrite rod, not by glue or anything like that, but just like getting some Teflon plumber's tape and wrapping it around a few times, and the actual rubbery stretchiness of that Teflon tape binds this down. And so you hang it down, and it's got a nice half a second torsion vibration, and it doesn't, you see it there, it's initially when you build it, it's waving in the breeze and stuff like that, but it settles down nice and good. And then I've got another crossbar and a USB microscope, which I've said before, I really don't understand what's happening now, because I can see all new things in this, and it's something which is a bit scary, a little dimmer slider on the back of it. And for some reason I never, you know, I've just never seen it, so I don't know what's happening there. And so I attached that there, so I've attached the USB microscope by lashing it to this, it's called 8020 company, poor Australian company. They should be selling heaps of it. Fundamentally, schools should just have buckets of this stuff, and you should basically be able to order it in, build it, and then ship it out. Basically, rent 8020, so you can build whatever you want quickly, and then destruct it. You know, this is the madness. However, that's not been done in the education system, but it's done in my shed. So I've built this little torsion pendulum, and then I've got a reel of copper wire, which will supply the magnetic field, and I've got my soldering irons out of the shed. The new Aldi soldering iron is wobbly. It just doesn't have any heat in it. I don't quite understand that. So my old blast from the past soldering iron, and I've soldered this into earpiece adapter of a Qantas, they give you complimentary headphones. So I've just taken the 3.5mm double phono jack, which they've got there, taken out. I've got a series of screwdrivers. I've got my absolute favourite screwdriver of all time, which I've called the magic screwdriver, and I think I lose it every once in a while. And my son found it again, I think while we were in Melbourne. He got a photograph of it, and I couldn't believe it. I sort of memorised it differently, but it is indeed the magic screwdriver. So I have a screwdriver, which is one which I've ground down one edge of it. And it's just, it always, when every other screwdriver fails, it works. But for this, I had a specialist, another favourite screwdriver, which is for an instrumentation screwdriver. Really beautiful screwdriver to unhook the Qantas earphone jack, then solder it up. So I've up to the stage of making the magnetic field flipper, and I've got the basic relay circuit to go in. So I've got the little power supply, and this is nothing to it. It's just a 3-volt switch mode power, a real small power supply. I had built the got the power supply in a kit, electronics kit I'd built up for girls to play with. So, you know, I observed that when I was teaching electronics, the girls, I don't know, I could get them doing very creative things with optics and stuff like that. Particularly when I said, create whatever you want. Here's an optics kit, create whatever you want. And what they did is that they actually got the equipment and got a light and created a shadow, which was the Harbour Bridge and the Sydney Opera House out of bits, and it was just identical. And they were producing all these fantastic stuff. And I went to a Women in Science conference and actually got smaller, less threatening components, and basically a cosmetics case, but you know, it was an obviously cosmetics case, and underneath it had 10 very small, cute multimeters. They're only $4 each, for goodness sake, and a pack up there. And so it was designed basically that the equipment didn't have the one multimeter per group. Everyone could have a multimeter, and they could basically work in parallel and sort of check that the current was the same. That there's a lot more slightly different way of learning that I observed. So I built this kit for them. So from that kit, I've got a reserve from a relay, because I basically teaching gates and electronics like that. A relay is by far the best, because you can latch a relay. So you can build it as a latch for them to go on. The idea of this relay is that it reverses. It can be wired up to reverse the polarity of the current through going through this. Well, it's basically a hollow spool of copper wire. This copper wire generates a fairly weak, you know, a bit depressed by it, a very weak magnetic field. But that's all you need. And so I'm up to the point of actually placing it there. I've just got a few gaps in building it. And so hopefully I'll just go forward in building it. But it's been very interesting to propose a series of keystone experiments. Look, I'm doing walking fantastically. I have to stop here. I'm about to turn the corner here, coming down this canyon, Mitchell's Pass, and there is just a beautiful view of city lights. Somehow, so when I was a young kid, the best view ever from Adelaide, up in Adelaide, was going up the Adelaide Hills. You look out and you see the lights of Adelaide. So it's the place that you lived, and so you're interested in it. Now it's sort of, I feel alienated from it, because now I live out in the bush. I look down these lights and I think of all this humanity down there. But, okay, so the Einstein pendulum is is getting close and up to the point that I can photograph what I'm doing, put it out, explain what's going on. And I really don't care if someone else does it, because it's one of these things that I've done. It's got this story here. And of course, the stroke of brilliance is having the microscope look at the face of Einstein, because you listen to people and they say, oh, did you hear this experiment? He was able to get Einstein's face to move. Oh, what? And so you're looking at the hook to get the experiment up and going. So this microscope will look at a very small Einstein's face, and it should be able to pick up the slightest fraction of movement for one of these things. It's just the easiest way to go. So I've got some mechanical things to do. I don't have the timing circuits here. I might ask for it, but so what I'm doing is I'm cutting right down to it. Then the actual that's one practical thing, and I think that's got enough to it. The one of there's another practical experiment which I'm just a little bit off. I just don't have. I have got absolutely no money, no resource. Like, this is not a dollar to spare to do it. So I'm going to build it up as close as possible, which is the basic strategy of you're stuffed, you can't go. Well, stuffed is the Australian thing, is the Australian word. I think I was surprised to find the word spruik is an Australian word. I spruik for something. So this is where you say, hey, come over, look at what I'm doing. Or hang a shingle. I don't know where that's come from and whether that's a common word. But yeah, you're stuffed. And if you're stuffed, you can still basically, I think another term, which is the United States term, is you MacGyver things. So basically take very small components, which you think are impossible, and build it into a fantastic part that you can go along. So the major idea of this is going to be such, my legs are even aching, just I'm going down this hill, I was thinking about coming up it here. But it is a glorious view from here. Sorry guys, you can't see it in podcast land, but it's been very heavy rain, and heavy rain removes all the particulate mist, I don't know, it comes from all the forests. The forests here produce eucalyptus oil. So as it's been hot for a few days, the visibility starts to crawl in. It's hard to see it, and the land, the visibility crawls in, so the land looks much, much bigger. It's much more, so you get a different sense of scale coming across here. Yeah, so there's that particular project, and I'm planning across with it, and people will come to see the strategy. That's where you deploy as best you can. Given that you've got a period of time, and the strange thing, I don't have any particular end time for it. I've got to try and work as hard as possible to build the things up. And so hopefully this Mark Greenhill has just listened to the first bit and got the first little bit. I'll just write it out nice and clear for him. No, I don't know. It's just going to be hard. See if I can get a meeting with him to chat through. Okay, so the overall strategy is that there is no positive feedback. There's no area. No one is giving you positive feedback at the moment. Yet, the thing is to not set that aside to say, well, I've looked at all the feedback. I can't do anything with it, except I've looked at the other strategic things, and there are certain things I can do. And so this is with the podcast software that I have to go a certain distance, that it's a sort of private thing, and get the software so I can just pump it out. Now, that's what I'm going, but I've got to actually try and actually analyze this next step of how you can promote it, because what I've done is then I've gone back and looked at the education cycle of kids and how you can basically... Oops, there's a car going out here. It's pretty amazing here. I've had to go off to the side of the road for this car, but there's little waterfalls. When I can say little waterfalls, it's sort of like, I don't know, there's just little waterfalls around the place. It's all rather cute. I don't know how this gets across into the main. I think we've got a road coming down. So we're up to the point now of having automated lessons. Now, there's a sort of a series of things that you do is that once you write out the process, that A goes to B, goes to C, and it's managed by such and such a process, you can start saying, oh well, rather than me producing expert content, can we just get experts in general to produce the expert content? And so unfortunately, I've only had two people, and there's sort of this feeling it's enough. So that's unfortunate. So if I can get more expert content, and then to expand it out to produce the expert content, to render it, and then to actually supply the system. So the stuff I've got is the system which does it. There's another beautiful waterfall coming outside. This is because it's rained like anything. I can't understand how this waterfall, because there's actually only just a hill straight up, so I don't know how the water is. It must be going through various points. So there's sort of getting back to it all. I can sort of at the point of restructuring it now. We've just got to go and meet it. So at this point in time, I'm just quietly going out and seeing who wants to be, I mean, you know, how it goes and how organizations look at it and where it should be embedded. And so it really should be embedded in local radio, or local podcasting things to let organizations go, and so when they want to speak to people and they want to get their message out, they will go to a radio station, a traditional source. So if you are say, hey, I'm not a traditional source, the conversation can't really go anywhere. So it's trying to work that out, and trying to trying to actually remove the... I think I've removed all the practical software bugs to it, but there are sort of big chunks, like it's like a go-kart which is grinding along. At the moment, I've still yet to have a good conversation or find anyone. This is the answer. I was trying to think, where's all this water going? So the road's actually a little bit flooded coming out here. I guess the water's on been one side of the road, now it's just pouring over to the other side. This is again getting things deployed out there. This is trying to get to feed Blitz, trying to get some sort of assistance to go beyond the most basic exposure that I have, because the broader exposure means that I can interest people or probably seed the basic ideas. So this is a basic thing that six months ago, or 9 months ago, around that time, I would have, say, two listeners to a podcast. And we've got perhaps a few more. It's just moving that up to a few more, which can strike, that someone may take up one of the ideas, get things going, or may feedback that might be going in. It's just that the probability may be 1 in 10,000, and that may happen. And so 2 to 50 to 100 is a great base to work off. Just you've got to push it along there. But there's this whole area of broadcast audience and great engagement that I don't fully understand, and I'm a bit skeptical of listening into people's interaction with Facebook. That I don't think people interacting with Facebook interact in such a way that they I don't know, it's just the number of steps. I hear it's almost what I'm looking for is multiple steps. People be able are considering what they want to do and do multiple steps, and that multiple step is a pathway through what I'm developing. And I really feel that Facebook, as I hear it, is everyone gets a post, reacts to a post, likes or not, and then that burns out, and the next post comes along. So there's not the attention to get there. So it's actually linking out from this to, I suppose, establish an audience listening to it, and establishing a use for it. So I think you can keep on analysing as much as you want to realise, I perhaps am going in a correct direction, because I'm answering a different question. I'm not answering what do we need for education for everybody to go up and to achieve the set goals. I'm answering what new strategies can we have that will pick up just a few people, which will eventually lead to a change further down the track, which will lead to a feedback circuit which we can build forward. So it's a different strategy, and it's sort of like a really researched based strategy, because you're not looking for a commercial gain. You're looking for research information, that key piece of next information to get you forward. So again, going through the Einstein de Haas experiment, going back again. So at the moment I've discussed three sections. One is practical, quick experiments. The actual second one is the actual practical experiments I'm doing. And the third area is just the general development of education systems, sort of parallel education systems, which strike out and try and do a different thing. It's not aiming to service a large market and have a large uptake and measure its success that way. But say in the Einstein de Haas one, there's a general assessment of what class of experiment is the most powerful one to do, and by being extremely simple, here comes a car, by being extremely simple. She was not going slow. Oh, God. Sorry. So you start off with, there is this gap here. I've sort of reviewed my knowledge. There's a gap in this knowledge. And pushing through, there's a gap here. So what group of experiments is possible to do which would have a profound effect? Then how do you measure it? And how is that educated put through? Then how is it put into a simple structure? Einstein's face moves from side to side when the magnetic field flips, and the spin of the, oh crap, oh sorry, there's a branch still to get my eye. Far out. Can happen to the best of us. Shit. Okay. So. It's. But if you have people who want the entire solution put out to them and guaranteed, essentially, people will set up, I have to profit from it. I'm just what's in it for me. And if you do that, you can't say, oh, initially I want to do this experiment. It's got this great benefit for you. Because you actually haven't actually built it and actually worked out how to go ahead with it and what the hot spots are. But I really think that I'll just have a go at building this in my shed. So I've got one or two more things to, quite honestly, probably a day or so's work, if I'm allowed to do it, to push ahead. And, you know, perhaps I'll get an old strike there. So that's the overall idea. This is a reverse style of podcast where I go with the practical stuff at the first and actually then go to the theoretical stuff. The theoretical stuff is basic research, research survival or research mentality. So the research mentality is fundamentally different from the people who demand answers right away, which is the practical, you know, what most practical people do. They want their car fixed by a certain amount of time. They want the television on by a certain amount of time. If it's sort of like you've got late adopters, midstream adopters, early adopters, and then you've actually got the people up at the fuzzy front end that is shoveling the stuff into those early adopters, and you've got to actually understand that you're in that regime and acclimatise yourself and not actually put too much energy for it. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.